Welcome to another edition of GBB Live. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are and wherever you are listening, you are having a wonderful, wonderful Thursday. It is draft night and it's been an exciting week. I know not much has been going on, but man, there's a lot of anticipation. It's been fun for myself getting back to the grind, you know, being able to cover many different things. Hope you've enjoyed some of the content I and others have put out over at Bluff City Media. But when it comes to the draft, and there are many great draft minds out there, but specifically to Memphis, it's hard to find anyone whose opinion is more exciting to hear about draft prospects and what the Grizzlies are doing than the wonderful Chip Williams. Chip, how are you doing, sir? I know that you've been, you know, going, it's like you've been promoting a movie. You've been on many different shows, but thank you so much for taking the time to join us, man.
I appreciate that, Sean. No, I've been doing great. It's like, I love doing this. You know, I was joking. I was on a podcast about 2 hours before I hopped on this one. And I was joking with the guy. I was like, yeah, Sean Coleman asked me to be on his podcast. Like, I can't believe this guy, you know, same day. And the host was laughing. It was another, Grizzly Bear Blues guy. And I was like, look, that's a joke. I can't even pretend like I'm mad. Every time someone asks me on a pod, I'm super excited. And especially when it's a pod to talk about the draft. So thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I hate to tell you that we're not going to talk about the draft, Chip. What we're doing on this live edition of Grizzly Bear Blues is we are going to talk about your 16 favorite Mediterranean cuisines. Do you have them lined up?
Wow.
An hour long conversation about all your favorite Mediterranean cuisines. Does that sound good to you? Changing it up a little bit. How's that sound?
Okay. I'll say falafel, a little overrated. I don't get the hype, but a good hummus, I'm all in. Let's do it.
I was going to get your opinion on the escargot parfait, but we'll save that for another time. All joking aside, you've seen Chip on the 901 Grizz pod. I know that he was on the Grizz Next Gen pod. I believe, as a matter of fact, you talked with the wonderful Jessica Benson and CJ as well. You've been all over the place, so we thank you for taking the time to join us. And are you ready to dive right into some more draft conversation?
Always, man. Absolutely.
So want to go about it, you know, a different perspective. And first, Chip, I'll get your opinion on this before we even get to the draft conversation. We hit on a few rumors. I've had the pleasure of talking with a few other folks as well. You know, Parker Fleming's taking care of Grizzness, as well as Keith Parrish, his Grit and Grinds, both friends of the show. Had a great time talking with them on their podcast. And we talked about, you know, some different rumors and different things looking at when it comes to the draft. But Chip, you know, there's been a few rumors out there. There's, you know, potential rumors that the Grizzlies are, you know, looking to dangle, you know, future first to try to get their wing upgrade. They maintain interest in OG Anunoby. You know, we know that there's been reports that they're shopping Tyus Jones as well. But overall in the NBA, there's not really been that much action. And the Grizzlies themselves, though they've made moves in the days leading up to the draft in the past, no moves as of yet. Just what is your grasp on things and your thoughts in terms of the trade that we all think will eventually happen? Some move is going to be made beyond just what they usually do on draft night. What are your thoughts when it comes to potential trades as we move into, you know, the hours leading up to this draft?
Yeah, it's really hard to get a read on exactly what the Grizzlies are going to do. And I think a lot of that is a huge credit to the way Kleiman and his, you know, guys run the Grizzlies now. I was joking on a podcast earlier this week that, like, back in the day when Chris Wallace was running things, like, you would get a press release in your email that would tell you everybody that was working out for the Grizzlies and what their accolades were and what they averaged in college and all this stuff, right? And now, like, you don't know anybody who's working out for the Grizzlies unless, like, their college tweets it out or an agency tweets it out or something. Nothing comes from the Grizzlies. They keep everything under wraps. And so that's good. I think you would prefer that your team operate that way and just let their work kind of do the talking for them after the fact. But it makes kind of what we do in terms of a prediction very difficult, right? Like, you have to really cast a wide net to make sure that you're getting – all the pieces that Kleiman could potentially be looking at. No better example last year than David Roddy. I don't think anyone saw that coming. I think even Roddy himself said he had no idea the Grizzlies were interested in him. So they're really good at this stuff. The one thing we do know is that Klieman loves to trade up in the draft. He's done it in the first round. He's done it in the second round. I believe every single pick except for the Ja Morant and Vince Williams picks were traded for by Klieman either before the draft or on draft night. That makes me think the sharp money should probably be on the Grizzlies trading up. Now, they have three picks and they have very few roster spots. Although, you know, they do have the extra two-way now, so you have to fill out at some point. But few roster spots, three picks. It makes me think that they are clearly targeting somebody and they're going to go up and try to get that person. But could that be in the first round? Could that be in the second round? Are they looking to package that 25 with Tyus, with, you know, maybe a Brandon Clark contract, Steven Adams contract, whatever they need to do to match salary? You've got a couple picks next year. Like, I really believe all options are on the table. I think the only thing I know for certain is we're going to see some sort of trade, and it wouldn't shock me if we see multiple trades tomorrow night from the Grizzlies.
Absolutely. That's how they operate. I think it's more likely that we're going to see multiple trades than it is that we'll see just one trade. But one thing I do want to say to your point, you know, there's a lot of different options on the table, and to another excellent point that you made, we just don't have a lot of information to work on, and that benefits the Grizzlies. But I will say one thing that's out there. You know, I know there's been a lot of speculation. I know that, you know, it's been reported out there. A lot of stuff that we anticipated to be the case has turned out to be the case. We know they're shopping for a wing. We know they're ready to potentially, you know, include a big trade package to get a significant wing. And part of that trade package is probably going to be Tyus. But I will say to anybody that's listening, just because a potential move with Tyus doesn't happen tomorrow night doesn't mean that significantly lowers the chance that we're going to see a trade with Tyus. This is a market right now where a lot of the teams that have targets that the Grizzlies are going after, they have other designs in the draft right now. We're going to discuss that in just a moment. But also, this is a very saturated point guard market. Kyrie, CP3, Dame, Harden, Scoot, Anthony Simons all potentially could be on the move. And I think it's reasonable to say all those point guards are higher priorities for teams. So a Tyus Jones move that makes sense, it may not happen until teams start to pivot away from what their initial designs are for this offseason. So that's one thing that I will say. I know that I'm right there with many people. It's hard to, you know, not get frustrated when all the speculation is there as nothing happens. But just because a potential major move to get an established wing with Tyus Jones doesn't happen last night or tomorrow night, it doesn't mean it won't eventually happen. Does that make some sense to you as well, Chip?
Yeah, it totally does. And I think Klieman said it perfectly at his end of season pressers. Like, it takes two to tango, you know, like we can all want a trade to happen, but it's got to work out, you know? And so, like, I know that's not what people want to hear. We want to see the action. We want to see the consolidation trade, whatever. Right. But this is a night, draft night, that forces teams' hands. We see more transactions on Thursday night of the NBA draft than you will see probably any other day throughout the calendar beyond the opening day of free agency and maybe the trade deadline. But I would guess more trades take place usually during the NBA draft than even do during the trade deadline. So, yeah, I mean, I think something's going to happen, but what you're saying makes total sense. It's like, yeah, we know Tyus's value. We know how exciting he could be, probably a starting level point guard in this league. But, like, yeah, there are also a ton of other point guards who are also really good, and beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Some teams may prefer some of the guys you just mentioned over Tyus Jones. So, of course, yeah, it makes total sense to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing about it is this, is that I imagine that teams are having conversations about plan A, B, and C. So if a team that the Grizzlies are talking with has a target that they like, if the initial goal of that other team with that target is not there, maybe they pivot quickly because plan B and C has already been targeted. But speaking of the plan for this podcast, I want to go with a bit of a different perspective. What I want to do here, Chip, is I want to go through different parts of the draft later tonight. And I want to get your perspective on, you know, a couple of non-Grizz questions, but looking at it from a Grizzlies lens about what potentially could happen. And we'll start at the top of the draft. Now, I'm not sitting here saying I'm thinking the Grizzlies are going to trade up into the top three, but I really want to get your perspective. First off, we'll start with a couple of non-Grizzlies questions. Victor Wembanyama, Wemby, because I'm horrible saying names. This guy has been called the best prospect since LeBron James. As a matter of fact, some people were even saying he may be the best prospect that we've ever seen. I think that there are others that are on his level. Luka, you know, I think Anthony Davis, you know, so on and so forth. Maybe Wimby's a bit better than that. But Luka just a few years ago, I think, is on the same level. But can you kind of put into perspective the magnitude of this prospect? Like, he's a profile that we've not seen before, but we've seen firsthand, you know, Jaren probably be the best example of that, you know, so-called big man unicorn that others have had their, you know, a nickname attached to. But Jaren's really turned into that over the past few years. What about Wimby? What makes him so special?
Yeah, so I think that for starters, Wimby is the best shot-blocking prospect I have ever seen, and possibly the best defensive prospect I've ever seen. Because you talk about a guy who is truly going to be able to block everything. I heard it brought up on another podcast I was listening to that Manute Bol, his rookie year, blocked 5 shots a game and played just 26 minutes a game. I mean, I really think we could see something like that. Like, he could average somewhere between 3 and 5 blocks, like, as a rookie walking into the league. He's got just, obviously, we know, 7'4", 7'5", in height. The wingspan, you know, it's well over 8 feet. It is ginormous hands, ginormous arms. So if you just start there, that's probably the number one pick in the draft, because any team that's Wimby is going to have a difficult time scoring at the rim. And that's while his body is continuing to develop. He's going to be able to add some weight and certainly some core and functional strength. It's going to just make year 3, 4, 5 and on the line throughout his career an even better and more imposing shot blocker. He's also, with the size, the wingspan, and some pretty good footwork, he can switch out on guys and not get absolutely cooked. So, like, you know, you want to put this guy in a pick and roll, try to draw him away from the basket. Well, that's fine. He's going to be able to stay in front of you because he has tremendous recovery ability and some of those mind-blowing defensive plays I've ever seen, like where he's defending the rim, right? He's basically under the basket. The ball is kicked out to the corner, and he'll take like 2 steps, put his hand up, and block the corner 3 before the guy can, you know, really even get his shot off. It's amazing what he's able to do as a defensive prospect. But then you add on top of that some of the stuff you see with, like, he's got legitimate handle. He is an incredible finisher around the basket, developing shot, but I think a projectable shot, something that you would think is going to, at a minimum, be a respectable jump shooter in the NBA. And he's a legit creator. Like, he can get past guys. He can make things happen. And the way, from an offensive perspective, he's going to change the geometry of a defense and force teams to collapse on him. When he starts to figure out some of the short roll passing, finding his teammates as the defense really, you know, collapses around him. I mean, Sean, like, I really struggle to find, like, what's the weakness here, right? And what you can say is, like, the body's a concern. Anytime someone is that large, the injuries are a concern. But you cannot bank on that stuff, right? You know, unless there's some sort of medical history that your team doctors have flagged that, you know, may remove him from the board. We've literally heard nothing of that from Wimby. He's gone through this entire season, played a ton of games, ton of minutes, been healthy the entire time. I really struggle to see, like, what's the glaring weakness in his game. For my money, I've been doing this, you know, not a super long time, but probably 10 years or so. I've said it before. I used to think Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic were the 3 best prospects I've ever seen. And I just think Wimby is a tier above the rest of those guys. We've never seen anything like this. The hype is 100% justified.
Yeah, the only thing that, you know, and I had this concern a couple years ago when we were, you know, starting to realize it was Scoot and Wimby as the top 2 in the draft, or at least we thought, until we get right up to it. You know, the only thing that concerned me is, you know, seeing what has happened with Kristaps, seeing what has happened with Jaren, the injury concerns that they had, you know, with the style of play that Wimby does and all the stuff he's going to be doing in the NBA, is his body going to be able to hold up? You know, hey, that's just naturally going to be a risk, but that definitely doesn't keep you from doing it. It's just the only unfortunate thing from Grizzlies' perspective that sucks is that he's going to be doing it in the Southwest Division for the Spurs. You know, they go from They go from David Robinson to Tim Duncan. They have a little bit of a hiatus from being good, and then they get the best prospect that we've seen in almost two decades. So, but it's going to be a lot of fun to see, regardless of where he plays. It's just going to be fun to see. So let's pivot now before we start getting into a Grizzlies perspective. The other hot debate, Chip. Just please tell me. I hear all these rumors. Hey, Charlotte's going to take Brandon Miller. It just makes sense. Better fit with LaMelo, so on and so forth. To me, this seems like a bunch of smoke, just like we saw last year with Jabari Smith Jr., as well as Paolo Banchero. I can't ever say names right. But my point is that am I wrong for just suggesting that Charlotte should just not be stupid and just take the best talent, which I feel is Scoot Henderson? Is it just that simple at number two?
Yeah. Yes. 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 You have it 100% correct. Scoot Henderson is the second best player in this draft. I've done just a very little bit of work on the 2024, just some guys returning, some of the top high school guys. Scoot would be the number one guy in 2024. If you want to make the argument that Brandon Miller plays the premium position, and it is harder to find a Brandon Miller than a Scoot Henderson, then I will listen to that. But from a pure talent perspective, prospect perspective, it's no question to me that Scoot Henderson is better than Brandon Miller. And that is not a knock on Brandon Miller. I have him, I believe, forward. I'm high on that guy. I think he's going to be a really good NBA player. But I think Scoot is like a franchise cornerstone potential NBA star. Whereas Brandon Miller could potentially, be an all-star level player, could end up being a really good player. But in the draft, you want the best prospect. You want as many chances at drafting a superstar as you can. And for my money, I'm with you. That is Scoot Henderson and not Brandon Miller.
So then let's get into the other perspective of things, is that say Scoot goes number two. At that point, we've got Portland with the number three pick. And one thing that we've discussed, Chip, is that, once Portland landed that number three pick, my initial reaction was, well, this is just another team that can put together a more attractive package for these wing upgrades that the Grizzlies need. Portland definitely looking for that themselves when it comes to putting people with, Damian Lillard to keep him. Now, I think that the scale of who Portland is looking for probably are players that the Grizzlies just isn't on their radar, like a Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, what have you. But to make this simple, if Scoot goes number two, what do you say, Chip? Do you feel that Portland makes the move to pick a Brandon Miller, or in which that means that Dame likely gets traded? Or do you think they use the third pick to put with Anfernee Simons, maybe Shaedon Sharpe, to go make a big splash move to try to make, one more run for a year or two with Dame? Do you think they make moves to keep Dame or make moves that eventually lead to Dame being traded?
Yeah, this is kind of the inflection point in the draft, right? I mean, this is really where – I guess two is kind of where it gets interesting depending on what name is called. But really from a trade perspective, it's Portland. And my read on it, just reading, listening, trying to understand what everyone is saying, is that if Scoot is there, I think Portland's going to have a really hard time passing up him and trading out of that pick. And if Scoot's not there, maybe it's a little bit easier for them to trade out of three and try to make one last run with Dame. But it seems like Dame has made it pretty clear he doesn't want to really play with another, rookie, teenager, whatever. He's got a pretty short shelf life left on his prime, and so he wants to maximize that. And I think Portland, it seems like they were on board with that. They knew, hey, let's get as high a pick as possible, then we'll make the trade, and we'll make one last run at it with Dame. Well, now all of a sudden, when you have a potential guy like Scoot Henderson that may just fall into your lap, plus like the guys you mentioned with Simons and oh my gosh, my brain just went blank on the guy they drafted last year, Shaedon Sharpe.
Yeah.
That is a pretty interesting young core to start building around. You flip Dame into some other really good assets that you could get, and all of a sudden you're looking at Portland like, whoa, that's a pretty quick rebuild with a really nice foundational core to start working with. So from my perspective, it all depends on who goes number two. I think if Brandon Miller goes two, I think the Trailblazers are going to take Scoot Henderson. And if not, if Scoot goes two, I am fascinated to see if someone is willing to jump up to get either Brandon Miller or Amen Thompson or one of these guys.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think at the end of the day is that if Scoot should be the second pick. But if he's not the second pick, Portland should take him and they should move on from Dame. Listen, say you get a Zion Williamson, and Zion Williamson is healthy for the next 2 years with Dame Lillard. Even with Jeremy Grant as well as Shaedon Sharpe, I still don't think that Portland is truly a team that will contend for a title. I think the time is right. Dame is coming off one of his best years ever. It just makes sense for Portland to move on. So, you know, I think that matters. But where this comes into the Grizzlies' perspective is we start looking at that third pick, fourth, fifth, sixth, up to the seventh pick, you know, with Indiana, who we've seen potentially on the move. You're now starting to see teams that could potentially be in the area where the Toronto Raptors may want to move. And we know that, you know, the Grizzlies have had interest in OG Anunoby, maybe, you know, some hidden interest as well in Pascal Siakam. But in that 3-7 range, I mean, do you feel that there's something there, Chip, that would make the Raptors want to use Anunoby or Pascal Siakam to make that move? Is there truly a guy worth moving those type of guys up in this draft to get? And do you think that ultimately happens? Because if that does, then that kind of takes a home run target away from the Grizzlies when it comes to trades.
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, like, trading with Masai Ujiri is scary. That guy rarely comes out on the wrong side of a trade. And so I have heard, like, you know, just kind of in passing, some people that would know that, like, it could even be the third pick at Portland may be on the table for OG. I've got a lot of respect for OG as a basketball player. I think he's really good. I think giving up a top three pick for him in a draft like this is surprising. It's not something that I would advise someone to do. Seems a little short-sighted. But when you start to look at the players, once you get past that top three, like, I think we know what Masai Ujiri is kind of into in terms of basketball players. I look at the Thompson twins, make a lot of sense. I think Cam Whitmore makes a lot of sense. Even a guy like Jairus Walker, Taylor Hendricks, Anthony Black, like, all these guys projected to go in that range have the length, the physical profile, everything that Masai really looks for in his draft picks. And when you think about what they have to trade off, like, they've already got Scottie Barnes, who's a really nice building piece. You would assume they hang on to him. And the two you mentioned, and OG and Pascal Siakam, you would think Siakam, that would make a little more sense if you're getting back a top 6, 7, 8 pick in this draft. Like, I would absolutely part with that plus other things for Siakam. That's a legitimate all-star that I think could be a top three piece on a potential contending team. I think OG, really, really good complimentary piece, probably a third or fourth starter on a really, really good basketball team. So I don't know personally that I see the value in a team like that trading for an OG and an OB, but Pascal does make some sense. And another thing you got to consider, Sean, is, like, of those teams that we just listed off, Houston, Detroit, Orlando, Washington, Indiana, like, are any of those teams an OG Anunoby or even a Pascal Siakam away from contending? Or does it make more sense for them to just continue the rebuild process and take a young player to continue to add to the young core? So I would lean more that that's the case. But I don't know. Is there someone you see that you think that makes sense for them to go target one of those two guys to really, like, push them over the top?
That's a really good point. I really hadn't thought of it that way, and I agree with you. I know Indiana wants that three, that wing, to be able to put with Halliburton, and I think that Indiana also, if they were to make that move, may then go and get DeAndre Ayton, then all of a sudden Indiana thinks that they've got a big three that they could go forward with. That may make sense, yep. But to the point, no, I don't think the others do. So I agree with you. It doesn't make a lot of sense for any of those other teams to really move off of it. Maybe Houston, but at the end of the day, no. I don't think that any of those teams should be in the mode of trading a top pick to just go get a guy that, you know, especially with Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby both being due for an extension a year from now, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right. I'm with you there. The Houston's the one. You actually said it at the end there. If they feel that they have Harden in the bag already, that would be interesting, right? I think if they trade that fourth pick for some sort of, you know, veteran upgrade, I think that kind of signals the quiet rumor that's been said out loud a million times that Harden may in fact be on his way back to Houston, and they're trying to speed up that timeline. But I land where you do. I don't really see it with any of those teams giving up an asset like that for one of those guys.
So where we are is that the Spurs won't take our offer of a Dylan sign trade for Wemby. That's off the table. Or you don't think that's it? Yep.
I mean, have we showed the Spurs like the medical concerns? Like, I mean, he is skinny, you know. I don't know.
I don't know. I know he may have allergies. I don't know. The other thing that I'll say is this, is that so we've gotten to the point now to where, okay, we've looked at the top 10, you know, and we kind of both are on the same page. You know, I think that, you know, intelligence is going to prevail. Scoot is going to be taken second. That kind of, you know, makes it to where Portland doesn't really make sense for them to go after a big trade. None of the other teams make a big trade. So perhaps it's more likely than not, with the way that we're projecting this to go, that the home run options could be on the table for the Grizzlies. So that works out well for them. So through the first 10 of the draft, really the thing to watch for from the Grizzlies' perspective is there a big trade that involves a potential Grizzlies target on the wing that happens? And if it doesn't, that just keeps an option on the table for Memphis. Now, as we mentioned at the first of this podcast, one thing that I think is definitely in play is that I do think the Grizzlies could operate on multiple fronts here. I think there's a good possibility that tomorrow night, the Grizzlies can look to use the 25 pick and maybe a future asset to potentially move up in the right deal. And then after the draft, they will use Tyus Jones and other future picks or maybe young players in the roster to get their established wing. And the reason that I mention that is because even if a big trade involving Tyus doesn't happen tomorrow, one thing we could see Memphis do is see if they want to move up to, you know, right after that late lottery. So I bring that up kind of as we're moving our way through this draft, Chip. When we get into probably that 13 to, you know, 18, 19 range, say the Grizzlies, you know, find someone that they just truly would love in that area, who are a couple of names? Maybe, you know, guys who we thought were going to be in the lottery that are falling, or guys that stand out to you as being great values in that area. Say the Grizzlies look to trade up in right after the late lottery, the middle teams. Two or three names that you think make a lot of sense in that area for Memphis?
Yeah, absolutely. The two names that come to my head immediately, one, you and I have kind of talked about him before, and I could not agree more when you look at his statistical profile and what the Grizzlies really value, and then what he brings to the table as an actual basketball player. Kasan Wallace from Kentucky makes a ton of sense. To me, Kasan is a top 10 player in this draft, and I have started to see pretty consistently the Intel mocks have him either in the late lottery, like 12, 13, 14, or even out in the first, you know, few picks outside of the lottery, 15, 16. I'm actually looking at the most recent ESPN mock. They have him all the way down to 18 to Miami. That is very gettable range for a guy that I value very highly. I think he was miscast a little bit this past season at Kentucky as a point guard. And I think he really is more of a true combo or even a two guard. But, like, you talk about a dude that is a point of attack defensive dog, and that's Kasan Wallace. Like, he will get after you as a defender, and a really fun fit with Bane and with Ja Morant, because you can kind of let those guys take a little bit of a backseat defensively, carry heavy weight offensively, and let Kasan Wallace just go wild as a point of attack and off-ball defender, which he excels at. I think he's got a little more offensively to his game when you don't put the primary initiating duties on him like Kentucky did at times this year. So that's definitely a name. And then, man, my guy for the longest time that I really thought would be an excellent option, either 25 or a small trade up, that it seems like the Grizzlies are going to have to get pretty high in the draft if they want to ultimately land him, is Kobe Bufkin, one of the risers of this draft. I really think that Bufkin's profile of this kind of combo guard, but like another guy who really gets after it defensively. And what excites me the most about him, and something I really, really look for in guard prospects, is getting to the rim and finishing at the rim. And that is one thing Kobe is so good at. You think about it with guards. If guards are constantly having to settle floaters there could be a flaw in the team context, right? You could have a big that's always taking up the paint, and so he's blocking the rim, whatever, right? Well, he actually did. He had Hunter Dickinson there, who's a guy, basically a paint-bound big, does shoot a little bit of threes, but for the most part, he's camped out in the paint. It didn't matter. Kobe Bufkin was getting by his man and finishing at the rim at a ridiculous clip for a guy who's 6'4" and very skinny. I think as he continues to fill out, he's going to be able to basically get in the paint and change the geometry of a defense at will. And with the shooters and playmakers the Grizzlies have, that excites me a ton. Plus, he shot about 35% from three this past season at Michigan. So you've got some projectable shooting numbers to work with. I love Kobe Bufkin. I love his fit with the Grizzlies. And so those are two guys that like really stand out to me is like, if those two start to slip either into the back half of the lottery or those first few picks outside, I would be excited if Kleiman started to make some calls and try to get up there. And then one more thing that I will just kind of throw out there, Sean, is I know some of the guys that the Grizzlies hired who used to be part of draft Twitter, and the Grizzly think put a premium on scouting high school prospects and scouting ahead, right? So I would imagine they are very aware that the 2023 draft is a good draft. I wouldn't say it's like great, but it is a good draft. It's going to be really good players that come out of this draft. But I think the 2024 draft pretty much across the board is considered down. Not a ton of top talent and not a ton of depth. The Grizzlies currently own two picks in the 2024 draft. I would not be shocked if they used either the Warriors pick or their own pick plus 25 and maybe try to see how high that gets them without having to give up any sort of player too. So I don't know, just something to consider. Would not shock me if they parted with either or even both of those picks next year.
And this is the perfect segue into a thought that I had, because I completely agree with you. Now, you know, if the home run hit, you know, in which the Warriors pick in 25 and, you know, future picks plus, you know, Tyus, one of our young wings, if just an all-in package for a home run hit doesn't make sense, I am in agreeance with you where I think that the Warriors pick could be in play tomorrow for the Grizzlies to get up in the top 20 of this draft to get a guy that they truly like. Because there's a good chance that guy's going to be a better value this year than if the Warriors pick, you know, falls into the high teens like it is this year, next year. Like if the Warriors are 18 or 19 next year, it probably is not going to have the same value as what it is this year. So I'm completely right in agreement with you. A dream for me, and I don't think this has a very good shot of happening. I think this is probably a bit too biased for the Grizzlies. But I've talked with a few people that cover the team I'm about to mention. And, you know, the cost of the player that I'm, you know, targeting with this move, I don't think is, you know, the cost of him is probably not as high as many think. But the idea that I had, and again, it's far-fetched. I don't think it makes, you know, too much sense. The idea that I had is contacting Atlanta, who drafts at 15, and offering Brandon Clark, Zaire Williams, the Golden State pick in number 25 for DeAndre Hunter in 15. Now, you may have to throw another money matching piece in there, but I think that that could potentially make sense for Atlanta, especially if they move off Collins. You didn't get a long-term replacement for him. You also are moving off Hunter, and you're getting, you know, $10 million less per year over the same thing. Now you've really, you know, helped the Hawks be able to, you know, help out their money situation, plus they're recouping some picks from, you know, the DeJounte Murray trade. But again, Brandon Clark, Zaire Williams, the Golden State pick from 24, and our 25 pick from this year for DeAndre Hunter in 15. And at the end of the day, you're off one draft pick, and you're getting better this year. So your thoughts on that, Chip? I don't think Atlanta does that, but I do at least think that it's not a far-fetched offer.
No, I think that's really interesting. I think Hunter, if you view him like as the number four pick in the draft and a guy that, you know, I think Atlanta once hoped would be a franchise cornerstone, it's just not. You know, he's been a disappointment in that way. But his profile of like this 6'8", 6'9", defensive wing, knocks down shots, that is very intriguing because the Grizzlies would not need him to be a high usage player. You know, they'd need him to defend the opposing team's best wing, or if they had a power forward, he could comfortably defend those as well. And then also that puts you into the range of some of the prospects we just talked about, you know? And it, frankly, even if you wanted to go up higher than 15, you now have a much easier spot if you just fell in love with someone at 11, 12, 13, something like that, right? It gets you to a different, I think, tier of prospect, and then could potentially be a launching pad if Kleiman just wanted to get crazy and say, hey, I'm getting in close to the top 10 or something like that. So that's interesting. And you think about it too, exactly what you said, it helps you get better for next year, because Brandon Clark, you know, unfortunately at best is probably going to be back, what, optimistically after the All-Star break, something like that, if at all, during the regular season next year. Zaire, we don't know. We'll see if he can have kind of a rebound in year three, but I think there's no question that DeAndre Hunter is going to be more impactful than BC and Zaire are next year, maybe even combined, you know?
Absolutely. And I think there's growth to his game in Memphis. And, you know, the other thing about this is that, you know, hey, you get DeAndre Hunter, who you envision being, you know, your fourth guy, you know, that fourth, you know, wing upgrade that you've been looking for years. You also get the 15th pick, which allows for you to get the combo guard that you're looking for in a Bufkin. By the way, Bufkin, you know, was one of the Grizz guys. I wrote my annual article, you know, looking from a statistical lens at the guys that make sense. A lot of the guys that make sense are going to be there likely for the Grizzlies at 25, but Bufkin really matches what the Grizzlies are looking for. So you get a Kaysen Wallace, you get a Bufkin. You're not only getting Hunter, but you're also getting under a good contract, the guy that eventually will be the Tyus replacement and the guy that, you know, could be a combo guard. He could play point, you know, in a pinch, but he can also next play next to, you know, Jaw as well as Bain. So I think that type of move, you know, checks boxes on other things, and you still got Tyus who you could use in another deal. So again, I think that's two, you know, rose colored glasses point of view for the Grizzlies, but that would be the move that I think would make sense. But moving on, you know, as we get closer, you know, the go-to moves for the Grizzlies, Chip, are going to kind of define, you know, how we wrap up this pod as we move on getting closer to the Grizzlies pick. The multiple moves that the Grizzlies have made, they've got two go-to moves. If the Grizzlies were a wrestler, this would be their signature move and their finishing move. What they do in 2019 with Brandon Clark and in 2022 with Jake LaRavia, they moved up a few spots to get a guy that they want before a team they thought was had interest in the same guy was going to get him. Okay, they moved up two spots in 2019, moved up two spots in 2022. When you look at this team, say that nothing big happens, and then the Grizzlies, you know, maybe are looking at, you know, the Nets. The Nets have Dorian Finney-Smith. They have Royce O'Neal. Maybe we could work out a deal to where we get one of those guys, but also move up to 21 or 22. But taking the established wing off the table for a second, say Kleiman does that. Say that he moves up a few spots like he's done in the past. You get into that 20 to 25 range where the Grizzlies stay put or trade up. Who are a few names that really stand out to you as being good values once we get closer to where the Grizzlies are going to actually pick tomorrow night?
Yeah, definitely. So the first guy is Bryce Sensabaugh. And to me, it is mind-boggling that he is consistently mocked even past the Grizzlies at 25. I just do not buy it. I think he is a special shooting prospect, both from a standstill perspective, or you put the ball in his hands and he can create a shot for himself. The one obviously large caveat that I will throw out there is that I do not have access to players' medicals. And even if I did, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what they mean. So you have heard a little bit like, hey, maybe he's got some medical concerns that's what's causing him to drop. And maybe that's the case. I don't know that to be true. But what I do know to be true is I watched this guy at Ohio State, and I watched him put the ball in the basket at a rate that very few people as freshmen have ever done it in the history of basketball. And so he excites me a ton, and I will believe it when I see it if he drops into the second round. I don't buy it at all. I believe that, frankly, he could go in the lottery before I would buy that he goes in the second round. I truly think he is that level of a shooting prospect. Second guy for me, he's mocked a little bit all over the place. We're definitely that part in the draft where, depending on which mock you're looking at, you're going to see a guy at a bunch of different ranges, right? But another one, I just don't think he's going to be there at 25, so you may have to make one of these trade-up moves, is Leonard Miller from the G League Ignite. I am very high on Leonard. I have him 11 on my personal board. I, first of all, I think he's a big as opposed to a wing. There are kind of two trains of thought with Leonard Miller. I'm in the camp that thinks this guy is a big, a four, could possibly develop into a five. He's got that kind of size, and his body is still very much developing. But when you watch him play basketball, like super funky scoring, like just really awkward. Nothing seems to look right, but the ball goes into the basket. He just is really good at kind of like creating a little bit of space for himself, or kind of just like he getting his way to the rim and finishing. Got a little bit of a jumper. It's got a ways to go, but it's at least somewhat respectable at this point. And legitimate handles, like can actually take people off the dribble and create. And on top of that, he averaged double-digit rebounds in the G League as a, I think, 19-year-old, 20-year-old, whatever he is, very young player going up against legitimate professionals in a very good league, in the G League. So, Leonard Miller, when you look at what he's good at and what Jaren is good at, I really am intrigued to see what a combination of those two would look like for the Grizzlies in the front court. Obviously, it would look quite a bit different than what we've been used to with Jaren and Steven Adams, or even before that with Jaren and Jonas Valanciunas. He is not that type of big man, but I do think he is one that fits the timeline they're looking at, could eventually be a fourth or fifth starter for this team. And, you know, you hate to talk about it, but obviously Steven Adams already starting to deal with some of the lower leg injuries that always scare you when a guy of his size starts to have. So that's number two. I'll throw one more guy out there, and that is Nick Smith Jr. from Arkansas. This is not always a prospect that is my type of prospect, a guy who is a highly touted high school recruit, you know, has, for whatever reason, a tough freshman season. And it, just typically, I go for the production, right? I want to see a guy play well before I'm going to rank them very highly. But at the same time, you don't want to remove the context and just look at the raw numbers. And it's true that Nick Smith dealt with a very weird team context in Arkansas. Like, they had no shooting whatsoever. They had a lot of really, really fun guys, and they're going to have a lot of players drafted Thursday night, but they had zero shooting. And he's a guy that I think when the NBA spacing opens up for him, he's got tremendous handles that I call him the touch king. Like, everything he puts up is like a feather floating onto the basket. I just believe in his shooting. I believe in his ability to get to his mid-range, his ability to finish around the rim. The high school stuff is incredible. He's one of the highest ranked high school players for a reason. And I think he had a really bad situation in Arkansas. And there have been some, you know, rumors that I cannot personally back up, but some rumors at least do have some level of interest in Nick Smith Jr. So I think he warrants a mention here is like, if this guy starts to slip into the late teens or early 20s, then if the Grizzlies are looking to trade up, it would not shock me if he is the target.
And there seems to be several of those type of guys that, you know, kind of, you know, you would think at one point in time, maybe before they came into college, that they were going to be lottery type picks. You know, I'm thinking of Jet Howard, Derrick Whitehead, Derek Lively, though he seems to probably be going, you know, in the lottery this time, maybe. Gigi Jackson, as well as Nick Smith Jr. You know, there are some of those guys that could be good values as home run hits. So maybe the Grizzlies kind of get away from, you know, the statistical profile or, you know, the older high Q players with a lot of production for multiple years in college. Maybe they get away from that. So that's an interesting point of view. They could go different ways. You know, I know a guy, you know, a couple of other names that, you know, from, you know, my piece that I wrote that stood out as, you know, being Grizz guys. Brandon Podzimski, forgive me if I'm saying him wrong, Podzimski, Pods. I'll let you say.
Pajimski, I think it's Pajimski, but Pods is what I go with every time. I'm with you.
Yeah, Podzimski. He's a guy that stands out, you know, is just, you know, being a guy who could self-create, good shooter, outstanding rebounder for a guard, gives good defensive energy. He's another guy that potentially could be there. And, you know, I know that others, you know, look at Colby Jones as kind of being a guy that could do a little bit of everything, you know, pretty well. So those are a couple of other names, but I agree with you. Leonard Miller is, you know, he doesn't stand out to me because I probably myself value offense a bit more. And when I look at a prospect that doesn't really have the ability to score, or maybe not doesn't have a lot of obvious scoring upside, that kind of, you know, I guess put him down a notch or so, but I've seen multiple people say this guy really adds value in other areas, and that's something that could stand out to the Grizz. So the whole point is that we can cast a wide net. As we get closer to the Grizzlies pick, you said this before, as we get closer to the Grizzlies pick, even if they trade up, there potentially is, you know, 5 to 7 guys that could make sense. But say the Grizzlies use 25 in a trade to go make a significant move tomorrow night, all right? There also seems to be some names that could potentially fall lower than where they are projected. You know, you talked about a Bryce Sensabaugh and others, but who are potentially two, or say we get to the, you know, early 30s, Chip, and the Grizzlies have used 25 in a trade, but they have future picks. Again, maybe they want to use their own first rounder next year to potentially move into this draft to get a guy. Name me two or three guys who, if they fall into that very late first, early second range, and, you know, they're falling, you know, lower than you expected, two or three guys that could make sense for the Grizzlies to come back into the draft and get.
Yeah, there's one name that has kind of popped up a lot for me, and the huge knock is his size. Marcus Sasser from Houston. He's frankly a two guard. Who's stuck in a point guard's body. And so he's kind of forced to be a point guard at times for Houston. And I think that's what a lot of people view him as at the next level. But you talk about a guy that's like gets after it defensively, fits exactly what the Grizzlies are looking for, absolute knockdown three-point shooter, provides some creation. A guy that, like, especially the scenario we're speaking of right now, if they use Tyus in one of these big trades, including 25, I could see the Grizzlies having some interest in Marcus Sasser. Because as you well know, I mean, he fits that statistical profile, hits a lot of the indicators that they look for. So that's definitely a name. Let's think, another guy. I tell you what, it continues to surprise me, but I have seen Chris Murray fall into the second round more than a couple times on some of these intel-based mocks. Now again, talking. One of those I'll kind of believe. Now I'll kind of believe it when I see it. I know you're a big Chris Murray guy, but so I like Chris Murray. I love him in the second round. If you get him in the 30s, I feel great about it. I'm also okay with him at 25. There was a time where he was like borderline lottery guy, a little too high for me. But if you're getting him in the 20s or 30s, really like him. Combo forward, supposedly a knockdown shooter. I think he is. The numbers weren't amazing last year, but I'm a believer in his jump shot. And a guy who can defend, like just high IQ, smart player, puts up the numbers, checks so many boxes for the Grizzlies. So if he's another one that were to slip, I would absolutely be looking at him. And I'll give one more name that we have not talked about. I could literally talk about every player in this draft because in some way they would excite me if they're on the Grizzlies. But I'm trying to limit myself here because I know you don't want to talk for 12 hours. But Ben Shepherd from Belmont, right down the road in Nashville. Honestly, he's got the size of a wing, but I really think Shepherd can create. I think, like, the way they use Desmond Bane in terms of a backup point guard or primary initiator at times, I think Ben Shepherd could eventually become that. He's an excellent, like, off-ball shooter. You run him off all kinds of actions, get him open, whatever. He just needs a little bit of space, and he's making the shot. But kind of a funky athlete with some legitimate creation upside. So if he's honestly worked his way up into the first round conversation, but if another scenario where if he's available in the 30s, checks a lot of boxes the Grizzlies look for in a prospect. So I'll throw out those three guys because I think that group, those three, are kind of the ones that Kleiman is really into when you start to talk about this range.
Yeah, and definitely a very interesting group of names because there are a lot in there that, you know, could make a lot of sense. And like I say, I think Chris Murray, especially if the Grizzlies were to trade away one of their already on the roster, you know, wings. I think Chris Murray makes some sense. You know, others that, you know, statistically, you know, could attract the Grizzlies. I know Jamie Jaquez is a guy who's kind of rising up. He's getting some steam behind him, especially with the Heat at 18. He's a guy that could make sense. You know, we mentioned Colby Jones. So those are some others there. But we hit on the point, Chip, is the fact that even if the Grizzlies make a move tomorrow night, once again, with the fact that the 23 draft likely is going to offer more value than the 24 draft, this is why I'm saying I think that we're going to see a significant move for the Grizzlies to get one or two guys they like in tomorrow night's draft on one front, and then them also potentially use pieces on the roster and future picks to get that established wing upgrade. So that should be a little bit of excitement for our listeners and Grizz fans, is that I think there's going to be multiple moves on different fronts in the near future. And as we wrap up here, Chip, just two or three names. You know, the Grizzlies have two, you know, middle to second round picks, 45 and 56. Two or three names that make sense for you. I've talked about a few of them with you, you know, already that really stick out as being, you know, just absolute, you know, Grizz guys in terms of checking a lot of the boxes. But just two or three names you feel could be really good value at the end of that second round, or even, you know, undrafted and become a two-way guy.
Yeah, totally. I think two guys that were actually college teammates, I'll hit on the higher-ranked one first, that you and I think are both really into is Kobe Brown and Damoy Hodge from Missouri. Kobe Brown, I jokingly texted someone the other day, it's like if you made the 2023 drafts version of David Roddy. I don't think he's quite the prospect Roddy is, but I am into Kobe in the second round. Like 6'8", 250 pounds, played center for Missouri, projects as more of a combo forward in the NBA, but legitimate advantage creator, which is kind of one of those buzzwords used in the draft, but like a guy – What that means to me in this specific scenario is you pass Kobe Brown the basketball, he is able to get to spots on the floor that are a positive shot for him, right? You can't stop him from going where he wants to go. And on top of that, he had an excellent, excellent season shooting from three, which is you have to take a little bit of caution there because – The numbers were not great up until this most recent season, and they were elite last season. I think he shot 43-44% on really good volume this past season at Missouri. And before that, I don't know that he'd ever shot like beyond the low 30s. So a little bit of caution there, but there's at least a full season's worth of evidence that he can knock down, catch, and shoot threes. Defensively, he's probably going to struggle at times, but a guy who can probably guard a lot of fours and fives, maybe even some bigger wings. So really into Kobe Brown, really fits the profile. Damoy Hodge is definitely a like deep, deep cut. I don't see him going earlier than the 56th pick with the Grizzlies. I think it's a very good chance he doesn't get drafted. Part of that is because he is going to turn 25 years old in December. But if you made me put, you know, money on one player from this draft ending up on the Grizzlies roster in some way, I would put it on Damoy Hodge ending up on a two-way contract for the Grizzlies. He just – everything about that dude screams, I am a Memphis Grizzlies player. I am a Zach Kleiman player. Try to think. Let me throw out two more guys. Two more guys, and then I'll be done. I could talk a lot of second round. But, all right, one, Julian Strother. Probably don't have to touch on him a ton, but, like, the pitch there is – elite off-ball shooter, like run him off whatever. He is a sniper, even can like pump fake, attack a closeout, got a really fun floater. Huge guy too, like 6'7", legitimately, and rebounds the ball really well for his position. So I like Strother. I think he's kind of one of the more well-known second-round picks because everyone's kind of second-round. But one last guy that I really did not expect to like, but I came away very impressed. Like I said, we touched on Arkansas a little bit earlier, watched a ton of Arkansas, and you've got Anthony Black there, obviously, Nick Smith Jr., Jordan Walsh. Those are kind of your big freshmen that they had there. They even had one more guy who went back to school because he got hurt. But the guy that consistently popped to me every time I watched Arkansas was Ricky Council IV. He's a transfer from Wichita State. I'm in no way comparing him to this guy. Just the style of play reminds me. He reminds me a lot of DeMar DeRozan, the way he plays. He's like a mid-range assassin. And when he gets to the rim, it is violent when he finishes. It's like it is, he's an awesome athlete, so much fun to watch, legitimate creator, and just a profile that I don't think the Grizzlies really have and would kind of be fun to add to this team. So, I have to say one more name. Jalen Slauson from Furman. It's like a less athletic Brandon Clark. Profiles completely as a Grizzlies player. Another one. Beyond Damoy Hodge, if I had to make a second pick, I'd say Jalen Slauson somehow ends up on the Grizzlies.
Absolutely. That was the first guy that they worked out. And I'll tell you, as I was going through the statistical formula in that article, I don't mean to keep referencing that. I don't mean to sound arrogant. I just really enjoy looking at the draft.
I love it. It's my favorite thing. I love when you write that.
I appreciate it. But when you look at it, yes, Slauson was absolutely him, Hodge, and Brown were right there as being the guys that really stood out. I just wish that there would have been someone maybe higher, you know, in the draft. But I definitely agree. Brown, at least one of Brown, Hodge, and Slauson definitely seemed to be destined to be a Grizzly either through a, you know, two-way or, you know, maybe a summer league, what have you. But it's going to be a lot of interesting to see. Chip, it's been an absolute pleasure. It always is. I know that me and you will be talking throughout tomorrow. You know, if you don't, if you have not, you know, read on Chip's work, you know, a lot of it is up at Bluff City Media, his big board, as well as plenty of insight. If you get about 30 minutes to an hour tomorrow, just look up Chip Williams at bluffcitymedia.co and you'll get all his work, especially if you're an insider. So much great content there. But follow him at Chip Williams Jr. I'm sure that he'll have plenty of perspective tomorrow, as well as after the draft and, you know, kind of, you know, grading out what occurred. Chip, I know that you've been busy. Thanks for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure, sir.
Yeah, pleasure's all mine, Sean. It's always great to talk hoops with you, man. And just looking forward to Thursday night. You know, it's one of my favorite nights of the year. I know it's cliche to say, but that is the truth. I love it. And this was fun. We should definitely do it again soon. I don't know, man. Maybe we'll like break down some summer league or something. I'm a sicko. I love summer league. I love it all. So this is such a great time of year.
I can tell you this, I have a good inkling that this will not be your last time on GBB Live or any of the other pods before the season starts. His name is Chip Williams, always one of my favorite guests to talk with. Chip, if you'll stick with me just for a second. But thank you so much for joining this edition of GBB Live. Plenty of content. I know there's so many great Grizzlies podcasts out there now. Thank you for making this a part of your rotation. Plenty of insight from Chip, as well as what potentially could happen with the Grizzlies again. I think multiple moves are going to be made. They may not necessarily be made tomorrow night, but I do think that we're going to leave satisfied that the Grizzlies have made a move that makes sense with a talent or maybe more that really could be intriguing. For Chip Williams, my name is Sean Coleman. Make sure you follow all the great podcast content over at Grizzly Bear Blues as well as Bluff City Media. Just subscribe, leave a 5-star review, do whatever you want to do. If you want to sit here and say that you can listen to Chip talking about NBA draft for 12 hours any day of the week, I will agree with you. But for Chip Williams, my name's Sean Coleman. Pleasure to be with you. We'll talk to you again soon here on GBB Live.